Okay, welcome back. Now, when you look at the Middle East and you look at Israel, hell on earth, and you look at Iran. Iran, now Mitch is going to talk about all this, but Iran is very powerful militarily. I think if you take away the nukes, which is you can't do, obviously, but I think Iran would be incredibly more powerful overall than Israel, the IDF, so-called IDF. It's IOF, the occupation forces. It's an imperial army. But I think the Iranians are very much underrated on the Western world stage because Americans are just kept in the dark. They're lied to, misdirected, deceived all the time. So anyway, Mitchell, welcome back. Great to have you. Tell me more about the... Let's start out by looking at these two military powers.
Okay, well, I should probably start out by telling you it has changed, okay?
Remember,
last time I was talking about Putin went to North Korea and signed a mutual defense treaty with them.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So what he said, and I said this last time, is that because the United States and NATO is giving advanced weapons to Ukraine to attack Russian territory, that they are going to do the same thing. So
good. What
he actually did in North Korea is North Korea, before we were not that worried about their nuclear weapons program because they had technical difficulties, and we were pretty sure that we could shoot their missile down, and that we could that their warheads were not you know that good, that they might burn up in the atmosphere or something. Okay,
right. So
we had these fantasies about it. Well, Putin took that fantasy away because he's given them the Avangard system. Now we cannot shoot down any North Korean nuclear weapons. We can't shoot them down because the Avangard is the Mach 25 reentry vehicle that is maneuverable. We can't shoot them down. But by giving Ukraine missiles that go a little bit further and can hit inside Russian territory, by doing that, what we did is we gave North Korea the ability to actually strike and hit our targets accurately with
Correct. Modern
missiles and avant-garde reentry
Yep. Vehicles.
Yep. Okay.
Now
so
explain,
read the writing on the wall here.
Mitch, please explain for everybody avant-garde, what it does, and why it's so critical. What that is a huge development. And again, the American citizens are kept in the dark. So what's the deal about avant-garde, and how critical of a change is this?
Okay, the avant-garde missile, it does is, first of all, when it takes off from its launcher, it goes very, very fast into its orbit. So some of our anti-missile systems try to hit them before they get into the arc of their reentry and stuff. We try to hit them there because they're going slower. But these missiles go fast, and it's hard to hit them upon launch. Once they release the reentry vehicles, the avant-garde vehicles, these are very fast, Mach 25, very fast. We cannot,
remember,
we,
this
we,
is
we
a very definition
to
of
begin with.
Hypersonic glide vehicle. This is a hypersonic
right. Missile.
It's the very definition of it.
So even if it wasn't maneuverable, we would have trouble hitting it. But it is also entirely maneuverable, and that makes it so we can't figure out the trajectory. We can't shoot it down. Okay, so
it's basically unstoppable. It's got a range of 3,700 miles. This thing,
right?
It can carry a 2-megaton nuclear warhead. This is a big deal.
They generally will fit 3 war avant-gardes in 1 warhead. So they can independently strike 3 targets from 1 launch.
You mean 3 warheads and 1 avant-garde missile? Okay, you've said it backwards.
No, what it is the avant-garde is the glide vehicle. Okay, That's the glide vehicle.
So the missiles are independent within the launch vehicle.
Right. The launch vehicle carries them up, and then the avant-garde is the glide vehicle that comes down and listen, the avant-garde by itself, what if the nuclear warhead on the avant-garde did not go off? It has still got the impact of 21 tons of TNT. Just the impact of it.
Got it.
It is accurate. It will pinpoint hit a target.
And he gave that to North Korea.
He gave that to North Korea because we gave long-range attackums to Ukraine. We are such geniuses. You know, Anthony Blinken, Lloyd Austin, Joe Biden, these geniuses.
They have no vision.
They have no foresight whatsoever. Yeah. They cannot figure that. So let's go to step two of this. Okay, so step two is what else are they going to give? Who else are they going to give improved missiles to? Well, I figure they'll give better missiles to Syria that they can strike our troops in Syria with. Okay, but even better than that, what if he gives these avant-gardes to Iran?
Or Colombia, South America, or Cuba? We're right back to the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, if the Russians had, cruise missiles, drones, I don't care what. If the Russians were giving the Cubans right now cruise missiles and drones, which could hit Florida, military bases, whatever, what would the American people do? They would demand they be removed. And yet right now, America is sending Ukraine these exact missiles, cruise missiles, drones.
Illegal munitions, cluster bombs, outlawed by 100 countries.
Yes.
We are sending cluster bombs
to those missiles
to use on Russia.
And drones are being used to hit and kill civilians in Russia proper. Understand.
Right.
In Russia proper. So what is it? Turn the tables around. The Americans are really stupid.
That the United States is a party to the conflict now.
We are a party
to the conflict, period.
Totally right. Yep.
We have been stepping up stuff incrementally, pushing and pushing and pushing against red lines. Well, guess what? Now Putin is starting to push and push and push. Okay, so let's look at Russia and Iran's treaty. Well, it's not really a treaty. It's more informal and incremental, but here's the way it goes. If Israel attacks Iran conventionally with conventional weapons, Russia will not be involved. If Russia attacks Iran conventionally but is going to successfully take down the Iranian state, Russia will enter the war. Okay. If Israel shoots a nuclear weapon at Iran, Russia will shoot nuclear weapons at the United States and Israel. Keep this in mind.
Oh, Israel.
An attack of Israel, an Israeli nuke hitting Iran, means Russia will launch a total nuclear war on the United States. Okay. This is not new policy. This is policy of Russia since 1973. And our leaders know it, but they still push. Okay.
This is Barack Obama and his handlers are doing all this.
Yeah. So the next thing above that, next escalation is, if Iran goes to war and they the United States launches any attack into Iran by any means, then Russia will enter the war on Iran's side. Okay. If the United States and Israel put Iran in danger of regime change or the falling of the regime, Russia will launch a thermonuclear attack on the United States. Okay, he's not kidding around. If Israel attacks Syria by land, Russia is involved in the war. If Israel and the United States put Syria in danger of Assad being overthrown and regime change, Russia will launch a thermonuclear war on the United States. Okay? So this is the this is the situation. And the way the army lays it out to us is if, well, you know, they're not going to do anything. They're too scared to do anything, so we can push them until we achieve our goals. It's like in America. In America, this government pushes and pushes. Oh, we're going to teach your kids to be LGBT. We want your little boys to dress up like girls. We want to spread sodomy through grade school and kindergarten. We want to make it okay if black people attack white people, but white people cannot attack black people. Okay, we're going to push this racism. We're going to push this sodomy throughout society incrementally, and we just have to take it. Okay, so they think that since they can do that to the American people, they think they can do that to Russia. They can do that to China. They can do that to North Korea. They can do that to Iran. And they're pushing India also. They keep criticizing India and jumping on India, and India's kind of getting tired of it, you know? We're not their boss, and they don't like us acting like their boss, okay? So what I wanted to do tonight is I wanted to go into...
Let me add one thing to help fill out your presentation. The Avangard, A-V-A-N-G-A-R-D, Avangard, the American public better be concerned about this. It can fly a distance, not quite enough to make it to the continental United States from North Korea. Okay, it can fly 3,700 miles, and from North Korea to Seattle is 5,100 miles. So it's about 1,200 miles short. That's how close we came to seeing the world change if the Russians had given North Korea ICBM capability to attack North America. That was a big signal, the Avangard. That's next to an ICBM with a 5,000-mile range. All right, it's 5,000 miles from North Korea to Seattle. Go ahead.
Okay, so once again, I'm trying to tell you Iran's perspective, so you understand where Iran is coming from. So when you see what's going on in the world, this is the topic, strategic intelligence, so you can determine how far can we push Iran? What is Iran going to put up with, and what is Iran not going to put up with? What are they thinking? What's in their head? That's what I want to impart to you. So Iran has strategic depth composed of not just distance, but by barriers. The heartland of the country is a strip of land in the west center of the country running north to south from Tehran, from Qom, Isfahan, to Shiraz. The west of this core is the Zagros Mountains range, which acts as a barrier to invasion. To the west of the Zagros Mountains is a desert, and to the west of this is the Persian Gulf. To the north is the Elburz Mountains. To the east and south, there are vast deserts with rocky hills. To the south is the Gulf of Oman. Deserts mean that you must have more logistics and effective transportation. It means that you are exposed as there is little cover and concealment. You must bring water with you. Over land, it is 497 miles from Azerbaijan border in the north to Tehran. From the Persian Gulf to Tehran is 620 miles. From the Gulf of Oman to Tehran is 878 miles. From the Afghanistan border to Tehran, it is 948 miles. Because of these distances, you can understand why Iran has built a huge rocket artillery force. Iran is a self-isolated natural fortress. Crossing deserts is like crossing a sea. Your lines of communication are very visible and exposed to air attack. The Desert Fox, Field Marshal Erwin Rommel, realized this and adapted his armored warfare in the desert to fleet tactics that the Navy uses. Crossing mountains both channels you into a few avenues of approach and makes creating obstacles to movement easy. It is ambush country that puts armored and mechanized units at a disadvantage. Mountains are to the benefit of the defender. The Iranians see their land as a paradise. The fruited heartland is surrounded by mountains on all sides and sitting in the middle of a desert. The word paradise comes from this situation. The root of the word paradise is parad, meaning wall. In ancient Persia, they walled off an area in the desert and irrigated the interior to create lush vegetation. This was paradise in the desert. The whole nation of Iran is a lush heartland walled in by mountains in the middle of the desert. Am I still on there?
You're right Hello? There. Yeah. Go ahead. You're good.
Hello?
Oh, you're okay. good. You're good.
I heard a big ding, so I wasn't sure. Oh. In 1980, right. Saddam Hussein's Iraq had the largest and best army in the Middle East. Iran was in disarray because of the 1979 Iranian Revolution. Iran was weak and disorganized. The flat land along the north shore of the Persian Gulf was inhabited by ethnic Arabs. This was also the area with the most Iranian oil fields. The United States suggested to Hussein that it was the perfect opportunity for him to liberate his fellow Arabs from Iranian rule and grab more oil fields at the same time. Iraq invaded Iran, and the first Gulf War was on. The Iran-Iraq War lasted from 1980 to 1988. The United States supplied Iraq with ammunition and with military intelligence. At one point, when Iran was sinking so much shipping in the Gulf, the United States even reflagged oil ships with American flags so U.S. Navy ships in the Persian Gulf could actively protect them. Even with all these advantages, Iraq never penetrated more than 40 miles across the desert into Iran. Iraq never penetrated into the mountainous areas of Iran with its large armored forces. The situation got so desperate that they even resorted to using chemical weapons. This illustrates that the desert and the mountains amplify the strategic depth that Iran has. This also convinced Iran that it needed a friendly arc of nations to its west to prevent another Gulf War. Iran lost 600,000 soldiers killed in this war, with another 100,000 civilians killed. The greatest gift America ever gave to Iran was the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and the deposing of Saddam Hussein from power. Our leadership has a total lack of vision and foresight. From Jimmy Carter letting the Shah fall to George W. Bush deposing Saddam Hussein, our American leaders have given Iran great advantages. The Iranian military is the largest in the Middle East. The armed forces are divided into three major branches, the Artesh, Sepa, and Farasha. Artesh is the regular active duty Iranian army that is divided into the Army, Navy, Air Force, Cyber Defense Force, and Air Defense Force. It has 317 active duty troops and 200,000 well-trained reservists that can be rapidly called up. SEPA is the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps. It mirrors the army and organization. They have 250,000 troops. Farasha is the Iranian National Police, which includes Border Guard and Coastal Guard troops. It also includes a 60,000-man, well-trained anti-terrorist special force called NOPL. As a result of the Islamic Revolution, all Iranian men are constitutionally required to be in the Iranian Revolutionary Militia called the Basij, and are required to get sufficient military training and have on-hand military equipment for national emergencies. There are 20 million troops in the Basij, with about 600,000 working full-time at any given time. Between the strategic depth caused by the terrain and the large regular armed forces and a very large organized and trained militia, a land invasion or any attempt to occupy Iranian territory would be extremely costly. Iran has refrained from developing a nuclear weapon because Russia is sure that it would spark a nuclear attack by Israel. Russia therefore advised them not to build one because Russia will nuke Israel if Israel nukes Iran. It was a Russian way to defuse tensions. An American attack or NATO attack on Iran would immediately bring Russia into the war. Russia will not allow the United States or NATO to control Iran. Russia is tired of being encircled and threatened. Iran was a victim of the great game rivalry between Russian, British, and Ottoman Empire. The tragedy of this disruption has shaped the Iranian mind. These European and Turkish outsiders really took their peace away from them and caused them great hardship. That is why Iran is so fervently independent and recoils from outside influence. because it hurts. Iran was always an independent empire until the British started colonizing South Asia for trade in the 1700s. In 1765, the British East India Company took control of Bengal and started moving inland and along India's coast to establish trading ports. Between 1804 and 1828, the Russian Empire attacked Persia in the First and Second Russo-Persian Wars and took Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan, the North Caucasus areas, including Chechnya and the plains of Dagestan, to the east from Persia. The British became alarmed that Russia might take Persia and get a port on the Indian nation from which it would disrupt British trade from India. At the same time, Russia was afraid that Britain would expand north from India and disrupt its trade routes across Central Asia. Britain tried to gain control of Afghanistan during the First Anglo-Afghan War, 1838-42, without success. Raiders from Central Asian steppes constantly attacked Russian villages on the frontier. Consequently, Russia invaded to take control of the lawless land. By 1848, Russia had conquered Kazakhstan. In the 1840s, Russia was expanding south into Turkish lands of the Ottoman Empire. The British wanted to contain Russia and did not want them to have a navy in the Black Sea. During the Crimean War in 1853-56, the Turks, British, and French tried to stop Russian southward expansion. The Russians lost and destroyed their navy so they would not threaten British shipping. In 1856, the British invaded Persia to stop Persia from taking Herat province in Afghanistan. The British seized southeastern Iran. The Persians withdrew from Herat in 1857, and the British withdrew from Persia. In 1857, Indian native troops called Sepoys rebelled against the British East India Company, and the British government took over the governing of India. The British quickly took over what is today India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Bhutan, and Burma. The empire would last until 1947.
Yes, it is. Even then, it was a huge amount of people. Yeah.
Wow. So the empire would last until 1947 when India got independence from the United Kingdom. In 1868, Russia took control of Tajikistan north of Afghanistan. From 1870 to 72, the shifting populations in the Caucasus created a great famine and some genocides, taking at least 3 million lives. The people were migrating between Persia, the Ottoman Empire, and Russia. Basically, Christians like the Armenians and the Georgians heading for Russia, Shia Muslims heading for Persia, and Sunni Muslims heading for the Ottoman Empire. By 1876, Russia had conquered Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. This made the British anxious that they would take Afghanistan, so the British invaded Afghanistan again in 1878 and started the Second Anglo-Afghan War of 1878-1880. The British would not occupy Afghanistan, but they made it a protectorate of Britain. This was to keep the Russians out. If the Russians invaded, Britain would join the fight on the Afghan side. From 1877 to 78, Russia went to war with the Ottoman Empire. This was the Russo-Turkish War. Russia allied with Montenegro and rebel armies from Romania, Serbia, Bulgaria, and Greece against the Ottomans. The British did not freak out about this or intervene on the Ottoman side. It was settled by the Treaty of Berlin in 1878. Russia got a little territory in what is now Moldova, and Montenegro increased its territory. Serbia and Romania got independence from the Ottoman Empire. Austria-Hungary got Bosnia, and Britain got Cyprus. The war greatly weakened the Ottoman Empire. In 1894, Russia conquered Turkmenistan, completing the Russian Empire in Central and South Asia. In 1908, Bulgaria declared independence. It had run its own affairs since 1878, so it was just a formality. The Balkan Wars lasted from 1912 to 1913. Serbia, Montenegro, Bulgaria, Greece went to war with the Ottoman Empire to basically kick it out of Europe.
Ottoman Empire, think Turkey. Think Turkey. Go ahead.
Turkey. Montenegro gained more territory. Serbia and Greece doubled their territory. Bulgaria expanded south. The Greeks took Crete, and Austria-Hungary annexed Bosnia. Bosnia then, as now, had many Serbs living in it. They were upset that Austria-Hungary took Bosnia and diminished Serbian territory and power in the Balkans. This This led directly to World War One. A Bosnian nationalist assassinated the Archduke of Austria-Hungary and his wife in Sarajevo, Bosnia, on July 28, 1914. That day, Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia. Russia was the ally of Serbia, and France was the ally of Russia. Germany was the ally of Austria-Hungary, so Germany declared war on Russia on August 1st and France on August 3rd, 1914. Germany attacked France by going through Belgium, violating their neutrality. Consequently, the British Empire declared war on Germany on August 4th, 1914, and this had a major impact on Iran. In 1907, rivalry in Iran was quieted with the Anglo-Russian Treaty. Russia did not want the British Empire controlling their southern borders, and the British Empire did not want Russia on the Persian Gulf or Arabian Sea, where they could threaten shipping from India to England. Russia was to have northern Persia as its sphere of influence, and the British Empire would have southern Persia as its sphere of influence. On October 29, 1914, the Ottoman Empire attacked Russia on the Black Sea coast. On November 2, 1914, Russia declared war on the Ottoman Empire. So now it was Germany, Austria-Hungary, and the Ottoman Empire against Serbia, Russia, France, and the British Empire. The Ottoman Turks wanted to seize the Azerbaijani part of northwest Iran and the Azerbaijani part of South Russia. The Azerbaijani people are ethnic Turks. The Ottoman Empire invaded Persia, so the Russians occupied northern Iran, and their now British allies occupied South Persia.
Uh-huh.
These were invasions. From 1914 to 1917, the Qajar presidents, Persians, fought the British, Russians, and Ottomans. The Russians got the Armenian and Assyrian Christians to fight on their side against the Sunni Islamic Ottoman Turks and Germans. After 1917, the Qajari Persians also fought against the Ottoman. The Ottomans genocided 1.5 million Armenian Christians and 250,000 Assyrian Christians. Another 2 million people were killed in the war in Persia from starvation and disease. This is a terrible time for Iran. Their people were dying off from the war and the occupation by Turks, Russians, and British. They had declared their neutrality, but the Western powers ignored them. The Soviets pulled out of northern Iran by 1921, but the British overthrew the Qajar dynasty in a coup d'etat that they engineered and installed a military officer, Reza Pahlavi, as a puppet ruler and took control of Iran's oil fields under the Anglo-Persian Oil Company, now known as BP, or British Petroleum. Oil money was not used to improve the lives or infrastructure of Iran or the Iranian people. At the outbreak of World War II, the British ordered Reza Pahlavi to expel all Germans from Iran. He refused, so the British deposed him and made his son, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, the Shah. The Soviets and British invaded Iran in a surprise attack and occupied it for the duration of the war. The United States sent 30,000 troops to Iran. They had agreed to pull all troops out 6 months after the war. The Soviets did not and had set up some puppet states in the north. This caused the Iran crisis of 1946. The UN made UN Resolution 2 telling the Soviets to pull their troops out, and they finally did by April 1946 under pressure from the UN Security Council. The Soviets retained control over some of the oil fields until November 1947. The Shah was by now very anti-communist. The Shah wanted to completely westernize Iran. One of the barriers was that traditionally when people died, they would leave their land to the Shia mullahs. The Shia clergy owned most of the farmland in Iran and ruled their tenants like servants. The Shah pushed land reform to take this away from the clergy and give it to the independent landowners. In the process, the Shah also started doing away with Islamic culture and made Western clothing and entertainment available. The patriarchy was attacked, and women had rights like in the West. The Shah was westernizing
Mitch,
to inoculate...
Question.
Yes.
Question.
Yes.
What happened to the Shah, Reza Pahlavi? What happened to his son? I think he was over here in the U.S. or in England. He's still around.
He's here in the United States. He's still around.
He? Yeah.
Yeah.
You never hear a word about it.
He's still around.
All right.
Yes. Yeah. So the patriarchy was attacked.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I was just going to say, getting rid of
like in the West.
Getting rid of Saddam Hussein was a master stroke of idiocy. You need stability, for God's sakes.
Yes.
Anyway, go ahead. This is crazy.
So the Shah was westernizing to inoculate Iran against Marxism. My
right.
father was an immigration officer, and he had to transport a prisoner to Tehran in 1972. He told me that you could drink alcohol in Iran and that the women looked very hot in their miniskirts. He said that he was surprised at how many beautiful and well-dressed women he saw walking around Tehran. That, of course, is not how I imagine Iran being today. If you see pictures from Iran in the Shah's time, it looked like a Western country. People wore Western clothes, did Western things, Western entertainment. In 1952, Iran held free and fair elections. Mohammad Mossadegh was elected. He introduced Social Security, higher taxes to include higher taxes on land rent that the Islamic clergy collected, and land reform to put more land in private landowners' hands. This was unpopular with the Islamic clergy, but his biggest sin was to nationalize all oil production. This was unpopular with the United Kingdom and the United States. In 1953, the CIA and British MI6 engineered the overthrow of the democratically elected leader of Iran. In 1954, the Shah signed the consortium agreement giving British and American companies a 50% stake in Iran's oil fields, Iran keeping the other half. From 1963 to 79, the Shah implemented his White Revolution. His intention was to forestall communism. The Shah had already emancipated women, made secular courts and secular education to reduce the influence of the Islamic clergy, and made it illegal to wear the traditional clothing and turbans. People were ordered to dress in Western dress. In the White Revolution, he expanded transportation networks, built dams and immigration, eradicated disease, boosted literacy, encouraged industrial growth, and instituted land reform. This made the clergy pay 20% tax on rents that they collected from the land they owned. Peasants were no longer tied to their land or to the Islamic clergy. The Shah's reforms also meant that LGBT sex was tolerated. As a result, it was rampant and laws against it were not enforced. The people were very against the rampant sodomy and putting gay marriages on TV. Outraged the population. The 1979 Islamic Revolution was a response to the modernization of Iran, which was destroying their traditional culture, their social norms, and was a direct attack on their religion. The Shah was seen as a puppet of the United States. In fact, the Shah was a puppet of the United States, since it was America that was oppressing traditional Iranian culture and society, as well as undercutting the authority and the power of the religion. America was called the Great Satan. Iran had not been allowed to run their own affairs for 175 years. They were tired of the rest of the world telling them how to live their lives, and they wanted freedom from foreign influence.
Right.
I just must mention that once the Islamic Revolution took control, they executed thousands of gay men. The Ayatollah wanted them exterminated. However, their attitude towards transsexuals was paradoxical. If a man got a sex change to a woman, then it was acceptable. Many gays
were they doing
took
that? Mitch, were they doing sex change surgeries back then in Iran?
Yes, sure. Keep in mind, sex change surgeries in the beginning could just be a matter of sewing breasts on, tits on, and stuff.
I see. Yeah.
So it wasn't elaborate. It was sort of rudimentary.
So Iran
now has the second greatest number of sex change surgeries in the world after Thailand. There is currently a death penalty for homosexual acts in Iran, but it's perfectly okay to be transgender. I just had to mention that because it's just bizarre, sort of weird.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
That they would allow
paradox.
That, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so soon after the Islamic Revolution, the West encouraged Iraq, who had the largest army in the Middle East at the time, to invade Iran. The first Gulf War lasted from 1980 to 1988 and killed about 1.5 million people. This was seen in Iran as an American-British proxy war. America openly supplied Iraq with weapons and munitions. This desire for freedom from Western influence shaped Iran's foreign policy. The Islamic Revolution liberated Iran, but left Iran vulnerable to American influence on its neighbors, who would always interfere in Iran, just like Iraq did at the suggestion of the Americans. The Iranian government was set up with a leader of the revolution, the Ayatollah, at its head, and watched over by the Guardian Council, which would guard the revolution by never allowing Western influence to creep back into Iranian politics. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, the SEPA, was also to protect the revolution, and the army, Artesh, was to protect the nation. Another goal of the SEPA was to assist neighboring states into creating their own Islamic revolutions to cast off Western influence and control. If its neighbors were free countries, then America could not use them to launch attacks on Iran. This is not meant as conquest, but liberation. Iran has no intention of subjugating these newly liberated nations to Iranian rule, culture, or religion. This revolutionary project was intended for the whole world to liberate itself from America. In this sense, Iran does not control Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Palestine, or the Houthis in Yemen. They do, however, give these anti-American liberation movements all aid that they can. Iran would like to see Lebanon and Syria as independent states friendly to Iran. It would very much like Iraq to be a friendly state, but would be happy if it was just neutral. It would like the Arab states to be neutral towards it and not allow the Americans to use its territories to launch attacks on Iran. After the Iranian missile attack on Israel on April 13, 2024, Iran declared that if any Arab nations in the Middle East permitted the United States or NATO to launch any air or ground attacks on Iran from their soil, Iran would declare war on them and attack them. The Arab nations that had American bases forbid the United States from launching attacks on Iran from any of those bases. Russia notified the United States that any attack on Iran by the United States forces would mean war with Russia. Russia has made clear that a nuclear attack on Iran by Israel will mean a nuclear attack on Israel by Russia. Russia has also stationed troops along the Israeli border with Syria and has made clear repeatedly since 1973 that any land invasion of Syria by Israel will mean war with Russia, up to and including nuclear war with Israel and the United States. In the calculus of war in Lebanon, if Israel launches a war with Lebanon and Hezbollah looks like it's losing, Iran will intervene. If Iran intervenes in Lebanon and Israel attacks Iran, Russia will definitely get involved if the United States enters the war on Israel's side. Iran does not want a war with Israel or the United States. Israel is very badly wants a war with Iran and wants to drag the United States in. Israel wants to destroy Iran so they can do what they want in the Middle East. Russia will not allow the United States or Israel to destroy Iran. That would be an existential threat to Russia because it would allow nuclear weapons on its southern border that could hit many critical Russian places with tactical nuclear weapons and defeat Russian nuclear early warning systems in South Russia. Iran is not a threat to the Arab peoples, but it is a threat to Arab leaders that are puppets of American foreign policy. America is not friendly to the Arab peoples or Islamic culture. The people of the Arab nations hate us with a burning passion for the exact same reasons that the Iranian people hated us in the 1979 revolution. The American military presence in the Arab Middle East is an act of extortion, not an act of friendship. You see, it is the threat of Israeli nuclear attacks on the Arab nations that forces them against their will to allow American military bases on their soil. As long as there is an American base, Israel will not nuke their country. Americans have bases in Iraq, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Bahrain, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan. These nations are not our friends. there are victims of an American-Israeli protection racket. If you travel to any of these nations and wander among their citizens, they hate you so much they will cut your head off with a dull knife. In fact, the only thing that keeps American servicemen in the Middle East is Israeli nuclear weapons. If America goes to war with Iran and launches attacks on Iran from any of these Arab nations, Iran and Russia will go to war with them. If Israel nukes Iran, Russia will nuke Israel. Once the Israeli nukes are gone, there is nothing to keep Arab hatred for America from exploding. At some point, the Arab leaders will have to side with their people or lose power. We have not been clever in the Middle East. We have set a death trap for ourselves. Let me assure you, just as you think that America is right and God is on America's side, the Iranian people are the same way. While only 15% of Iranians are not religious, 59% of Americans are not religious. Religion is a powerful motivator, stronger than politics. Iranians are far more likely to fight for their country than Americans are. Just because we hate Iran does not mean that the Iranians do. Okay? Mm-hmm. These people are loyal to their country. They love their country.
Yes. Yeah, well, it used to be that way here, didn't it?
Well, what it is if you watch the news, they give you an impression. They always give you an impression. Oh, the Russians hate the Russian country. The Iranians hate their leadership. The Chinese hate their leadership. The North Koreans hate their leadership. We hear this all the time.
It's all
we
lies.
Americans just take it for granted that these people hate their leaders. They do not hate their leaders. They're loyal to their leaders.
That's remarkable. Yeah. We don't know that. The American public is so trained, brainwashed, conditioned. They're formatted to think like that. They don't have any other reality. Remember, that reality that they have and relate to comes out of that screen. That's where they get it.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, we're creeping ever closer to war. The United States is like, the rest of the world, when they watch this Biden-Trump debate, the rest of the world looked at America and said, you know what, these are a bunch of, first graders with nuclear weapons. That's what America is. We are led by the equivalent of first graders with nuclear weapons. We are an insane asylum for clowns.
I concur all the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're just an insane asylum for clowns, I would just like to point out that our Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State is supposed to be a guy who leads diplomacy. There's nothing diplomatic about this guy. All he does is demands things from other countries. There's no negotiation. It has to be the American way. Because why? Going back to what I said earlier, that's what they do to American. You have to accept LGBT in school. You have to accept transgender surgery on your children without your permission. You have to accept it. Yeah. Okay? And they're doing the same thing overseas. Because Anthony Blinken is a woke person. And he treats the other countries like he treats Americans. You have to accept this. This is the only right way. Once again, going back to April 12th of this year, the New York Times said the reason why we have to go to war with Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea is because they are patriarchies and they do not allow women to run their country. And they do not accept gay rights. That's why we have to have World War III. Isn't it sort of ironic that the reason for World War III, the evaporation of many cities and peoples, will be for sodomy? The first story of a big fire wiping out a city in world history is Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, and they of course get wiped out because of sodomy. Now because of sodomy, we all have to die because of sodomy. Nothing is more important than sodomy and feminism. That is what's important. Your life is not important.
That's not circular logic. That's pragmatic logic. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Sickening.
Yeah. Yes, it is. So you know, the thing is, everybody's caught up in this election thing, and the thing is people have to realize that the people in power, what's going to determine who the president is going to be, will be the what the global elite thinks they need. What serves their interest will be who the president is. If they want to destroy America, if they want to take America down for sure, they'll elect Trump. Because see, if they put Trump in the presidency, they know that a chief and BLM will burn America down. Okay, they know that the army and the law enforcement will stand down and let them burn America down. And when finally that the front stairs of conservative Christian people, okay, and they start fighting back, then the army and law enforcement will come in to snuff out the law-abiding, hard-working people of America. They'll snuff them out, okay? And this they want to do intentionally, okay? But if they just want to go ahead and move on to World War III, well, Biden's the man for that. But no matter who becomes president, World War III will happen. And this is not just Biden and Trump. This is also Robert Kennedy, too. Robert Kennedy is against the war in Ukraine, and Trump is, to a degree, as far as popular, makes him look good.
I assume you're going to get there, but RFK just told Netanyahu to go ahead and finish the job. So he may be against the Ukraine war, but
all three of them are for a war in Israel. So the only thing is, are we going to take the money that we're sending to Ukraine and pour that into a war in the Middle East? Because if we go to war with Iran, there will be a thermonuclear war. This will quickly spiral into a thermonuclear war. Listen, Putin, China, even India, they're sick and tired of us. They're tired of our bullying. They're tired of us interfering in every damn thing and demanding our way on everything, demanding our way when it comes to sex and feminism. And that is the thing that most countries object about us, okay? Those are Marxist things also, keep in mind. You know, America is the Marxist imperialist in the world right now. I mean, Americans are clueless about this, but let me tell you, the rest of the world can see it very clearly, what's going on. They know what this stuff is.
Yeah.
You know?
Not a good situation. Your overall view now, how much more, and I don't think, in my worldview, that Russia is able to launch a nuclear war without permission from the highest level of control. And there is a high level of control on this planet. So if they want to have a nuclear war, they'll give Russia the green light. I don't think Russia can do it without some kind of sanction, certification from the controlling elite. But
well,
where are we
in that? Well, let's put it this way. Russia's going to do what they say up until the point where it risks Russia's survival. Russia will do what they have to do.
I think you're right on that. So what do you think? All right, everybody wants to know, yes or no. I've been told, yes, a war is coming, and a big one. So.
Yeah, well, you know, a big thing is that President Vučić of Serbia, a week ago, he put his police and military on a footing for alerted them for total war. He said, prepare for total war. Okay, he's a good friend of Putin, and Serbia is allied with Putin. Putin
Correct.
Is now preparing for total war. Vučić said that there will be total war within 3 months. So we're looking at by the end of September is when they're thinking total war. And if they're gonna push the button, they're the ones who push the button, so they know when they're gonna do it. Okay.
I agree.
They could do it sooner. It depends on how irrational and idiotic we can be. Okay.
Well, there's no limit to that, unfortunately.
This nuclear war will not be about your Constitution or your Bill of Rights. It will not be about your freedom. That is not what this war is about. It is about sodomy and the right of women to kill their babies. That is what this war is about.
Pretty
grim. Is what we're going to all die for. Well, hopefully we won't all die, but your friends, your loved ones will perish for sodomy and abortion.
There are probably right now billions of people in varying stages of dying from the injected bioweapons. Don't forget that.
Well, remember, the WEF wants 7.5 billion of us to die. I believe they're going to pull this off, you know?
It's certainly on the track to do exactly that. Thank you, Mitchell. Not good news, but it's real. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon, next week. All righty.
Okay, bye-bye.
Mitchell Henderson. I wish I could serve all those up to you in a print form. They're really, I hope he puts them together. All right, these programs are all up under Mitchell's name in the left-hand side column at the home page, so go listen again if you want. Share it. Back with you tomorrow in 21 hours. Take care. Talk soon.